Hello and welcome to this episode in our Learning for Sustainability podcast series. I'm Conor Galvin and it's a pleasure to host today's conversation. The series celebrates the work of the European Commission's working group Schools. We've been looking at Learning for Sustainability and it brings forward the insights, the practices, the questions that we have been working on in the hope of inspiring educators in Europe and beyond. So in today's episode, we're going to showcase the essential role of non-formal education in all of this, in how it can help enrich sustainability, sustainability learning, and how it strengthens the reach, the possibilities when it's good. And it's very much, literally about meeting people where they are. So I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by two colleagues who know more about this area than probably a lot of other people in the planet. Barbara Archeso, do you want to introduce yourself briefly, Barbara?
Yeah, thank you, Conor. I'm Barbara Archeso. I am representing in this working group the Lifelong Learning Platform. Yeah. And I work for NIP Veneto as a senior project manager and developer in the international area.
Super. And Matthew, no stranger to the working group. Yeah. Matthew Pye, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. So I teach philosophy in a formal, in school, but informally outside of that, the Climate Academy is a platform in which there's, in a sense, all the bits that are missing from the formal education, systems understanding and the possibility to take that into the world.
Yeah. And in a sense, Barbara, maybe you can help us with this, because when we talk about this whole area of non-formal education, what are we actually talking about?
Okay, I'll take the definition of non-formal learning given by CEDEFOP. So it's official. And it's described like that: acquisition of knowledge, know-how, information, values, skills and competencies in the framework of planned activities in terms of learning objectives, time or resources where some form of learning support is present, like student-teacher or trainer relationships. Yeah. So non-formal learning is intentional. From the learner's point of view, it may cover programs to impart work skills, adult literacy, and basic education for early school leavers. Very common cases of non-formal learning include in-company training, through which companies update and improve the skills of their workers, such as ICT skills, structured online learning, etc. Outcomes of non-formal learning may be validated and may lead to certification. Non-formal learning is sometimes described as semi-structured learning.
Okay.
So this is important because it's made on purpose. It has an educational purpose.
Okay, so there's some kind of intention behind it.
Yes, there is.
And this concept of knowledge exchange and so on is part of it as well. That's really helpful. Thank you. Matthew, the other element of our conversation today is to do with partnership. Mm. Now, you've done a lot of work in this space down the years. Would you tell us a little bit about, from your perspective, what does partnership mean when we're talking about this particular area and when we're talking about sustainability?
Well, if I follow on from what you just said about it's like semi-structured, I think that's a great advantage of non-formal learning, because you give the students a direction, you give the learner a direction and an orientation, but then they need more, support.
Yeah.
And in reaching out to partnerships through, for example, the Climate Academy, we recently did a partnership with the JRC in Varese about tipping points. So that's specialised knowledge, and they needed to reach out for that. So they knew the gap in their knowledge, framed by the non-formal learning, and then you have partnerships with experts. I mean, I choose the example of the JRC, but it could be anything, and it could be any topic.
Yeah.
But there's the really critical thing there is that you have this greater autonomy and greater, self-motivation at work that you don't get in a formal session, because in a formal learning environment, everything is more spoon-fed.
Yeah, super. Barbara, can I ask you to follow that a little bit? Because there must be, from your experience, there must be a number of kind of key foundational aspects or enabling conditions that actually allow these partnerships to take place. Would you have any thoughts and suggestions about that?
I think that the starting point are the values. Okay. If you don't share the values, you can't do anything. So starting from sharing the values, finding how to structure the activities in a way that is adapted to your target group. So be them young people, very young people, or adults, you need to adjust your activities to the target group.
Right.
And first, start listening to them. Mm-hmm. So this is also important, because if you listen to your target group, you can understand if you are sharing their values and if you can build on those values with suitable activities.
That's very, very interesting. And again, Matthew, that echoes some of the work that you started doing during COVID times. Indeed, you know, from within the context of the Climate Academy, could you give us one or two practical examples of how these things work if we really take it seriously and if we really want to make a difference in relation to sustainability in the non-formal settings?
Yeah. So if you take the Climate Academy, it's got 16 chapters, and it takes you through the natural sciences, the human sciences.
Yeah.
And one of those chapters is on tipping points that I mentioned earlier. And the work that we've been doing with the GRC was that the students then got more informed in depth about that. So they learned things from the online platform. And in COVID, online learning was, of course, accelerated because, you know, Zoom was created and all that. So you have this kickstart by learning online, and then you take an initiative to contact these partnerships.
Yeah.
And then out of that, for example, what has happened now is the students have been on the streets doing surveys. So they've been asking everybody on the streets of Brussels and Milan and Varese, okay, what is a tipping point? And then seeing the survey results from that, then they need help to analyze those results. So then they need to reach out to a university.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole, now when we started that whole process, we didn't know where it would end up, but the students wanted to know more. That led to a project, the project led to another thing. And so there's a kind of a beautiful balance, if you like, or a delicate balance between giving like this guided learning where you give them a firm start, but then you keep things open for those, let's say, super skills to kick in, which you don't get in a normal classroom.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we've talked a lot about in the working group is this notion of how incredibly innovative you can be in those spaces.
Yeah.
And again, both of you have kind of done quite a lot of work in this. Matthew, can I ask you, what are the sorts of the rocks in the road, the things that get in the way of good partnership work from your perspective?
I think the key challenge is always the coherence. Because as soon as you go outside a formal setting, you lose the structures that go with it. So structures of communication, structures of community, and so on. So it's a kind of risky business. You're always, in a way, fighting from the sides to do things. You're plugging into other people's networks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very powerful when it works. But it's a lot of hard work to try and establish those connections.
Yeah.
So you learn a lot of resilience. I mean, this is, again, where the big skills come in, because then you're learning resilience, determination. You're learning to kind of be creative in these processes. But the big blocks are simply just this, in a way, that the lack of structural support.
Right.
That's...
Yeah. Barbara, can we kind of close the circle on this and go back to that definition that you started with? And, you know, in terms of the enablers, if you were to say, what are the two or three things that really help when it comes to setting up and sustaining these sorts of partnerships, what would you say they are?
Okay, from my experience,
I come from
an organization dealing with vocational training. So it's very practical, experience-oriented. And from the experience, you learn. So it's the school of doing, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
So in my experience, what was very effective was the direct observation, which made people aware of what they were doing, of the results that they could achieve by applying certain methods, certain tools, which had an effect on for instance, on some environmental problems, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was very, very useful. And it helped also to connect different areas like digital and science and also in a practical way in the experiential laboratories, okay, as we call them.
Okay.
Where
so the
they experience what they will do next in their working environment.
And that's the key to good partnership.
I think it's very important.
Very, very good.
Especially with young people who come from disadvantaged background.
Super. And look, can I thank you both for taking the time to come in and for sharing those super thoughts and really inspirational ideas with us. I think if nothing else, today's conversation reminds us that learning for sustainability doesn't just happen. We have to work on it, whether it's formal or informal or non-formal contexts. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the messages perhaps that's come out of the work of the working group. In terms of non-formal and these informal learning spaces, it's a way perhaps of reaching people and opening doors, giving them opportunities that they mightn't have otherwise if they're marginalised and so on. And these settings allow us to be far more flexible than we could be if we're just working in schools alone. And again, as both of you have said, it brings in the experiential and the culturally relevant opportunities. So I suppose for those who'd like to explore a little bit more, the working group has produced a very rich collection of resources. We have practitioner fact sheets, we have input papers, we have research studies and a policy compendium, which will be published tomorrow, I think, or the day after. And we have an online course coming down the tracks, which has an element of non-formal and informal education involved in it. So I think that's, you know, this podcast will also be one of those resources. So you can find those, as you colleagues know, you can find those on the website, the working group's website. The podcast series will be available on the Education for Climate platform. They've been very helpful in terms of facilitating us around this. And it will also be available on the EU Academy site. So that's a nice double channel of reaching the informal, the non-formal and so on simultaneously. So thank you, Barbara, and thank you, Matthew, for coming into the studio. And thank you for DG Connect for facilitating us, for hosting us. Petra for producing. I'm Conor Galvin, and our listeners, thank you very much. We hope you've enjoyed being part of this conversation, and we look forward to welcoming you to another in the podcast series in the near future. Thank you.